Welcome to Life in the Urban City podcast, where life in the inner city meets the art of true stories and conversations, hosted by Eric Vasquez, founder and CEO of Justice for Youth. Here at Justice for Youth, we exist to mentor at-promise communities to develop as people, scholars, and leaders. Thank you for joining us and enjoy the show.
Hey, what's up, fam? Eric Vasquez here from Justice for Youth. And we want to welcome you to our newest episode of Life in the Urban City podcast. I'm here with the one and only Christian Verduzco. ¿Cómo estás, man? You doing good today?
I'm doing good. Blessed. Pleasure to be right here with you and everyone else.
That's good, man. It's been a minute since I've actually had a chance to sit down with you. And so when I knew you were going to be one of our guests, I was really excited because honestly, man, when I think about you, you embody like what it means to me to be a mentor, a solid mentor. So we're going to kind of, you know, unpack that a little bit, but I kind of want to start with what is it, you know, what's your story, man? Like, I know a little bit of it, but I don't know the full thing. Can you take us back? I mean, where were you born? What have you been up to all these years, dog? Tell me a little bit about your past and pieces of your story so we can get to know you.
Yeah. Dope. Take a trip down memory lane. Wasn't born in Pomona, but been living in Pomona my whole life. Was born in Monterey Park. I'm 26.
Okay.
Been in Pomona my whole life. Still here, planning to be here. And went to school here.
Where'd you go to school?
Ganesha High School. I went from Roosevelt to Cortez, to Ganesha. And then I was going to go to Village, but they didn't have soccer. They didn't have sports. Mm. So I told my mom, like, hey, I'm going to go to Ganesha because I want to play sports. But she wanted to send me to Village. She wanted me to send to a...
Why?
Because it's a more calmer, safer school. And, you know, Ganesha's a little bit more active. But I think it just comes down to the person at the end of the day, you know, and the environment that you live in. But went there, played soccer. And then after that, went to college, Cal Poly Pomona.
That's right. Local, baby.
Yeah, you know, I knew that I didn't have the luxury of, or even, I didn't even want to. I don't have the luxury of just packing up and going out of state. Like, my mom's here, sister's here. If I had a different situation, maybe I would have packed up and dipped. But local school, but was raised by a single mom. Dad kind of went out the picture when I was younger. Stepdad came in, lost my stepdad. Been with my girlfriend, but really just school. I think just school has been one of the highlights for me here growing up. Friends. I grew up on Holt, pretty primary street of Pomona.
The West Holt corridor, right?
West.
Yeah, and the trailer park's right there?
That's right there.
That's right. Yeah, I know. Every time I drive by, I still see your neighborhood right there and some of the homies that you've introduced me to. So it's really cool to know that you've been local and you kept it that way for school, you know, from the ground up and into college. And that's being an awesome role model, Doug. So I really want to applaud you and affirm you for that. And you've actually gone beyond Cal Poly, right? So can you just tell me a little bit about what that educational journey has been like?
Yeah. Got my BS, Bachelor's of Science at Cal Poly under a psychology major. Started learning the ropes of the field. I'm like, man, I got to get a graduate degree. I wasn't even thinking about a doctorate. So I'm like, oh, you know what? Got to apply for grad school. I had to learn that social culture capital. I didn't know, you know, my mom just went up to middle school. So I went to, now I'm at Cal State LA doing my master's in marriage and family therapy, with a little bit of a school counseling orientation, blending those two approaches. So I'm at Cal State LA. I'm in my second year, wrapping that up. It's a three-year program, so I have one more year, but my third year just consists of pure internship.
Yeah, big ups to you, bro. It's so dope because now I actually go on school campuses and I'm under the guise of Justice for Youth, and there I see you, dog, and you're over there rolling, and you have a different badge on, and you're doing your graduate work now, right? But you're still employed with Justice for Youth, and you still mentor actively to this day. And I know, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, at Justice for Youth, our mission, as you know very well, is, you know, we exist to mentor at-promise communities to develop as scholars, which you're repping really well, as leaders, which I know you're cultivating leadership in every student you're working with. And then just as people, you know, a lot of us didn't have, like you just broke down, we just didn't have that home life, that structure, that we had hardworking parents who were out there busting their butt to make it work for us. Mm-hmm. They weren't always available and present. So like different things have a tendency to like shape who we are. And so we want to help shape youngsters' lives and teach them to be good people. But what I want to hit on a little bit is like, what do you think out of your story would be some highlights that you think has shaped who you are as a mentor today? Like what pieces of that story have informed how you move now when you're working with students in our community here?
Most def. Probably some, I think why I'm so like calm and soft and corny and, but I do, it's all by design. I do it on purpose. Comes probably from like personal trauma when I was a kid. You know, some of the first reactions we have as males could be aggression. So I kind of take on the different role and like just being calm and loving. And part of the trauma. And then my mom being raised by a single strong mom has really impacted me. And I really started learning until I got older. You don't really know it when you're in it. When you're an adolescent, you don't see the bigger picture until you get older. I'm like, whoa, okay. She was a protective factor. I'm like, man, thank God I had my mom. I had a good role model with my sister as well. You know, her, she's doing her thing. Been with my girlfriend since high school. So we're high school sweethearts. She has impacted me. She checked me a bit. She challenged me for the good.
What's her name, bro? Let's give her a shout out. Yeah,
Jessica Flores.
That's right. Much love, Jessica.
Yeah. So she's awesome. Being curious, which means leads me to like just wanting to learn things, which means like, oh, I want to go to school. I want to learn things, you know, just being beyond the classroom, just learning about the world that we live in.
That's something I want to kind of pause right there. Cause I train a lot, right? I train people to be mentors. And sometimes I've had to unpack things that are maybe intuitive and then try to put language to them. And you just hit on something that I actually train on all the time is, as a mentor, we're often embodying and modeling behaviors that we want young people to now take on and adopt. And one of the things that I always try to rep and I like supersize it, you know, every moment I have is this element of being a learner. And I always say, you know, leaders are readers, leaders are learners. You should always have a curious posture, ask as many questions as you can, chop it up with as many people as possible, do a lot of self-learning. Can you talk about how you try to rep that when you're in one-on-ones and when you're in circles and when you're in the community space or carceral space? Because I know, you know, JU4Y reps, you know, mentorship in different areas.
Most def, yeah. Which is so much to talk about. But I think asking questions, my professor, you know, I think the sign of a smart person is a person who asks questions. Like, just I'm always asking questions, whether that be like the most like dumb questions or the most like, is he really asking that right now? But it's for my personal gain and I know why I'm asking, you know, but asking questions. If I'm with a student on a one-on-one and I, you know, I don't know something, I'm not going to tell them that I know. I tell her that I know. I'm just like, I don't know, but you know what? I could go find the answer for you. I know I have that skill of finding the answer.
That's so important for them to learn, right? Like, I just think about coming out of urban spaces, you know, access is this big thing that as a youth advocate all these years, I've always talked about, like, how do we improve young people's access? How do we start opening doors for young people to walk through? Because institutions and, you know, community barriers exist, family barriers exist. There's so many things that just keep our young people like closed in, locked in, and then susceptible to all kinds of crap because, you know, they just haven't been exposed to like all kinds of opportunities and learnings.
Exposure, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you essentially will, you know, model and then welcome them into this process with you to try to find out with them or for them.
Yeah, or even start, like, if I'm at a school campus, start introducing them to different personnel on a school campus. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm not just the safe person. There's other safe people for them when they come to school and where to get information and whatnot. Just start plugging them in with different people at a school campus, because I'm primarily school-based.
Yeah.
So, you know, I work for On Point, school-based mentorship. I know there's different approaches in JU4Y, but I just happen to be at a school. And when you work at a school, it's a village. You know, it's the whole ecosystem that makes the well-being and the safety of a child grow and flourish. And just being part of that system when you're at a school, it's an amazing thing once it starts just like working naturally and like,
yeah,
you know, leadership's such a big thing. It trickles down. Or
can you talk about On Point a little bit? Like, not too long, but yeah, you know, I know we could go for days on this, right, stuff, but just give a little hint to mentors that are listening and watching about like, what is that work? And then can you then maybe hit on some advice that you'd give just any young youth worker that wants to do an element of campus work to impact youth? Like, what would be some tips and some advice you'd give that person?
Yeah. Well, On Point, you know, campus-based mentorship, school-based mentorship, you know, we're the ones who pull you out of class. This is what I tell students literally. I'm the one who pulls you out of class. You know, I want to check in with you.
Yeah.
You know, I want to, you know, for about 15 minutes, you know, say hello, how you doing? And I'll send you back, you know. Or, you know, if I want to run a circle, I'll run a circle with a group of boys, group of girls, you know, and chop it up about different curriculum, leadership curriculum. So, you know, our three facets, you know, as I was taught by you, you know, you got the one-on-ones, you got running group for about 30, 35 minutes, and you also have in-class support. Obviously, we focus on academics, yeah, but the real bread and butter is, like, mentorship. Like, you know, you start with the child first, and then hopefully that impacts academics, that impacts relationship, that, yeah, impacts family, home, community, that impacts making choices. But it starts with the relationship and just wanting the best for this child. 'Cause I'm not a tutor, I'm more of a mentor. I'm a mentor that hopefully impacts academics, hopefully impacts all that, because,
yeah,
you can't learn when you're over here suffering.
Yeah.
So yeah, I run a group, I meet them one-on-one, or I'm inside their class modeling. And, during school hours.
Yeah.
During school hours.
I have some freaking funny stories, bro, about my years doing this early on. When I'd go in the classroom, there'd be these hardcore gangster fools that nobody could reach, right? And then I was doing one-on-ones with these fools, getting in group settings, and then I would show up in their class, and I would be intentional. I'd get a post-it, and I'd write like, hey, dog, I'm here because I love you, and I'm thinking about you. I'm not here to jam you up. So just pay attention, you know? And then I'd stick it on their desk, and then I'd roam in the classroom, and just, you know, like a teacher would, I'm looking over the shoulder of these kids, but I'd eventually purposely make my way back. And then I'd get in there. I'll be like, hey, dog, why are you the only fool that don't have nothing out? Take your dang pencil out and your notebook, homie. And then they do it. And I'm like the only cat who could. We're the only people, mentors, who have trust and rapport. They respond. What I would love to pass over to mentors, and then I want to hear your advice for campus work, is we touch often the will of the child, you know, and then teachers will often deal with the skill of the child. So they're out there educating, teaching, breaking it down, scaling their learning, but then we're out there like motivating, inspiring, connecting, loving, supporting, right?
The
coaching,
heart.
Yeah. And so I've often put it into that language. We focus on the will, and I can get a kid, you know, to do things that no teacher can. And I do my magic, you know, we do our magic and then we dip. And then they have to then learn to forge that pathway on their own without us. But those check-ins that you're talking about are so key, because you could circle back and be like, what's up? How you doing on that? Oh, not so good. Well, let's analyze that. Why are you not doing so well? What's going on in your life? Okay, this is what's happening. Okay, how do we build, you know, some structure and some responses that are healthy to these things? And man, I have heard the most wretched, horrendous stories of suffering, dog, and you know this, in those one-on-ones and in those circles that have forever shaped my life as a person. And there's something so beautiful and special about sharing those moments with students. That you just can't get anywhere else, you know?
We get invited.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
You know how, like, oh, like, let me invite you. No. You got it twisted. My professor said that, and I have little quotes from my professors, you know. We get invited into their lives. It's not the other way around. Like, I'm inviting you. Like, I'm a mentor. You're the mentee. I'm inviting you with me. No. I get invited, and it's a very sacred, personal thing. So don't take it for granted. You know, when you sit down and you share those stories, we're the ones invited to their homes. We're the ones invited to their lives, to their personal history. Yeah. You know, so
can you tell me maybe one sacred moment that has forever changed you while you were in a circle or in a one-on-one on a campus? I know there's many, but can you think of one you'd like to share? I could maybe share one then, and that may spark your memory. So I'll never forget. I got called to this school. This young man was having a meltdown, and they didn't want to call the police. I had been telling them, like, stop calling the police. It's the school-to-prison pipeline. Like, tap us, you know, let us support. So they call me. I rush over there, and I'm in a one-on-one setting in a principal's office, and this boy is just melting down. He's literally banging his head against the wall. There's literal blood all over the room, and he's destroyed the classroom. He's broken the computers of the principal. He's thrown all the papers and books on the floor. He's hyperventilating, and I'm like, hey, chill out. I'm trying to be calm in the midst of the chaos, and I'm like, breathe, dog, breathe. He finally kind of calms down, and I go, what's going on, fool? What's going on? And from the pit of his stomach, bro, I kid you not, he just cried out, my father, and then just broke down. And then I try to embrace him. In that moment, it just broke me, bro. And he, like, pushed me off violently. And then I just chill, dog, chill. And I went to embrace him again. Finally, he let me hug him. And he just put his head into my chest. And just my whole shirt, bro, was sopping wet from his tears. And I could tell it was, like, years of bent up tears and emotions that he's, you know, let out in that moment. And then, you know, it's funny because you fast forward later. Sometimes we lose touch with these kids. Unfortunately, this young man's brother was murdered just last year. And so I attended the funeral. And the first thing he said to me was, hey, remember when that time we were in that classroom, bro, and you helped me? I was like, yeah, bro, I'll never forget that. He's like, much love, dog. I'll never forget that. You know? And so that connection is like for life, dog.
It just sparked something right now.
I thought it would. Shout out to that young man. Yeah. I love you, dog. I know you might be watching.
I guess I think I have a couple like that, but this one's a little bit more on like the emotional side. Like this student, you know, he was going through stuff with his girlfriend, and one day he walked over to my classroom, and he's just like, we started talking, and he wanted to talk to somebody. And he just started opening up, like he really likes this girl. Like, he loves this girl, you know? And I just sat there and heard him out. And, like, he started breaking down because he didn't want it to end. He was a sophomore now. He's a junior. Like, he really liked this girl. And he just started breaking down. And he really just, you know, bawled out in front of me, you know? You know, like, the typical, like, you know, like, oh, I have to be tough. Like, nah, man, he should just let it all out. And like when I sat there and just listened to him and his story, and I highlighted all his strength. And ever since that point, I felt it was never openly shared and spoken, but I felt that our relationship grew from that point when I just was there to not judge him.
Yeah, that just pinnacle moment.
Yeah, and then he's doing great now. He's doing awesome. And, you know, hopefully he could just keep going, but.
It's so funny, too, because, like, us adults will downplay, like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. It's their world,
bro. It's their world.
Like, those relationships matter the most. I know you study this, but in psychology and in just, you know, development, young people in their middle school and high school years begin to detach from their parents and their family. And now they were once the most important relationships, but now their social network, their peer network becomes the most, you know, priority relationships for a season, and then later it reverts back, right? Yeah. Hopefully, if they have some loving relationships, those people aren't so prominent And then it goes back to the solid ones who have been there for so long, right? Moms, pops, whatever, you know, brother, sister. So I think that's so dope that you shared that story, because it reminds mentors like what they're sharing about these youngsters is very important, and we should listen intently with no judgment and a lot of compassion.
Yeah, and while they're going through that time, parents, I think, kind of lose the sight of touch when their kids hugging and kissing and showing like love, because they're growing physically. But I think we still have to.
They need that. Yeah.
They still need it, even though they're young teenagers, you know, even though they're hanging out with friends and whatnot. Mm. But I think for the advice part, Eric, don't take it personal when you're doing this work, when you're working with clients, when you're working with students who are challenging or whatnot. Don't take it personal, because it's not, nine times out of 10, it won't because of you. They're pushing you off because it's you. Like, no, because there's just so much going on in your lives at times. But, you know, don't take it personal. Stay consistent, you know, keep faith, keep hope, even in the most hopeless times, in the darkest times. I know it's very broad advice or whatnot.
No, it's good, dog. Those are nuggets.
Yeah, like, you know, first time I got into On Point, there was this one, you know, student. He's freaking thriving now. He's awesome. Started getting to know him. He was an angry student. He's like, one day I came out to camp, he's like, get away from me. Like, you know, I don't want to talk to you. You know, you're a rat. You know, you're a snitch. I'm like, I took it personal. And I went home. I'm like, ouch, that one hurt.
I hate how they always call us that. Why do they think we're rats or snitches? I hate that.
Which leads me to the other point. I'm like, all right. But I'm like, my supervisor, Deanna, like, don't take it personal, Chris. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know. So I'm like, all right. I'm gonna win this dude. I'm gonna win this dude. You know. And I kind of like bottom up about him and this group of friends, a peak. So you know, just to let them know how I move. Like, I'm not an admin and I'm not a teacher. And that goes to my other piece of advice. You're not an admin. You're not a teacher. You're not a campus security guard. You're not. You're different. You move. You navigate the campus different. You have to work with those school personnel. But you don't necessarily move like them. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to move a little bit different, a little bit more organically. That helps you reach those students that maybe other folks cannot reach. So you're kind of like, I see myself as like kind of like that middle person.
Yeah.
I'm that middle person between the students, the family, and like the school personnel that sometimes they need help reaching these students. Like, that's how I'm like the facilitator.
Oh.
I'm like the facilitator.
I call it the third voice.
The third voice.
Yeah. But I resonate with that.
Yeah, that's how I move. I may not look like I'm doing much sometimes, but hopefully I'm doing something. But safety is good. It's good, like safe, calm, school kids learning,
good,
thriving. They're in classrooms, you know.
Yeah, man. I think some of the things we're kind of hitting on talks about or references this idea of being trauma informed, right? Like how important that is. We've talked about building trust, you know. But I think being trauma-informed is so important. You talk about not taking things personal. Can you just give me like an elevator speech on, you know, your perspective and philosophy on how being trauma-informed as a mentor is so important in your work? Can you share a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Being trauma-informed, it's in the research, right? Awesome. Being trauma-informed is like you see the whole child beyond academics, beyond the classroom, you know. Why isn't this kid learning? Well, maybe because he's sleeping on the floor, you know? Why is this kid, like, cussing at me? Maybe because this is happening. You know, you really go down to, like, the root of it, you know, not just the overt behavior that we see. You know, behavior is communication. Behavior is communication. So you being trauma-informed, like, you just see students and youngsters and children and even adults. You just see people like suffering is kind of common in everybody's life. Some student told me that from like everyone kind of suffers in some shape or form. Everybody, but for kids, obviously, like I guess I don't have like the full, but you know, I'm not too good with like writing and maybe speaking. I just do it. I just see it, you know. Yeah. Like you treat people with kindness, you know. Like just treat people with kindness. That's all we ask for. No matter who you are, just treat people with kindness. And these kids, like, and one thing I want to say about trauma informed is that you rub it off on other people. Mm. Like as a school leader, like mentors are school leaders. We're part of the leadership, you know. We're part of the school. Like when you're next to a principal, and you know, like, oh man, like I know he has a story. I know she has a story. And like we start chopping it up, and the people next to me, I hopefully start rubbing off on them. Like,
yeah,
hopefully they see the whole child as well, beyond just the student.
Yeah,
and they know that when I'm on campus or when I'm talking to a student, that it's for the best interest or for well-being. Like, yeah, hopefully now they become the effect spreads, like they become trauma informed, the principal becomes trauma informed, and then it's a beautiful effect. And
that's that restorative practice, that restorative mm-hmm. rhythm. We're catalysts for change. We're influencers. We're disruptors on campus in a good way, right? Mm-hmm. And so I love that you bring that up. And being trauma informed is a lifestyle, right? Especially in the urban inner city. Like everywhere you go, any person you're gonna bump into, we all have our story, we all have our trauma. And mm-hmm. when we move like that, we bring forth a peace, a calm, an ability to create a space that people can heal. Hey, I know we're getting, you know, short on our time, but I want to end with this because I think that I've often thought about this in your life, because you reference a lot of people that have been so impactful. But, you know, being a mentor, I think good mentors can mentor because they've been mentored. Mm. And so can you maybe give me like your top three
mentors
who have just influenced you in a way that has changed your life?
My mom, my number one mentor. She held it down. Gracias. Dr. Pumakawa from Cal Poly Pomona under the psychology department. She's full-time faculty there. Mm. Dope. Super dope. Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Pumakawa. She got me to graduate school. She gave me the information and she got me to graduate school. You know, I was doing some research with her. So she's my mentor. She's still my mentor to this day. I check in with her here and there.
I think you're experiencing what you're offering, and I think that mentorship, once experienced, like, and you're being really looked out, upskilled, mm-hmm. guided, cared for well, you know the value of that, and you want to pass that forward.
Right? Dr. Pumakawa shared when I was doing research with her before, she's like, hey Chris, check out this org, it looks like your niche and it's up your alley. I'm like, all right. But then it was 6 months later that I emailed, and it was JU4Y, but she's the one who kind of gave me the reference during the pandemic.
Yeah, that's dope. How long have you worked for us now?
It's going on to 3 years.
Man, that's dope, man. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Congratulations on all the things that you're pursuing. I know that you're going to, you know, do big things in this world, bro. So when you get there, don't forget us, homie. Don't forget the gente right here in the city.
Mm-hmm. Never.
Hey, man, thanks again for being here with us. We really appreciate you sharing your story and just inspiring, you know, those who are watching and following us. And we want to thank all of you guys for joining the Life in the Urban City podcast. You know, we're going to be telling so many stories, bringing so many dope guests like Christian onto, you know, our podcast, so that they can continue to share stories, inspire youth workers, help connect to young people. So continue to follow us on our social media outlets. Our Instagram is banging, man. We're so happy with the direction that we're headed and the stories that we're telling. So stay tuned, y'all.